Thanks for the introduction, and I want to thank the organizers for inviting me to speak here today. What I'm going to talk about is joint work with my colleague Kostis Maglaris, and the topic is going to be a model for execution in a limit order book. Okay, so before I start, it might be helpful to get some context as to where this model sort of belongs in the financial hierarchy and what kind of problem it's trying to solve. In the past 5 or 10 years, there's been a sea change in the way trades are executed. Particular kind of trades. What I'm talking about is large orders. So for example, if you're like me and when you swing your bat, you're buying like 100 shares of Citigroup, then it doesn't matter. You're going to pay the bid offer. That's a small trade. It's not going to affect prices. On the other hand, if you wanted to buy 5% of Citigroup, that's has to be a privately negotiated transaction because it would massively affect prices. There's a whole range in between where there is some effect on prices, but you typically want to execute through exchanges and other sort of public venues. And what it used to be was there was a whole class of people called traders, and their job was to do this. So fund manager at Fidelity would call up a trader at Fidelity and say, look, I want to buy 100,000 shares of X today. And that guy would use his sort of intuition and experience and knowledge to sort of figure out how to optimally do it over the course of the day. And that was that. And those people have almost entirely been replaced by computers. So in particular, for large-ish institutional orders, trades are all done algorithmically. They are done by units at hedge funds internally or at investment banks who might do it as a service for their clients. In other words, accepting an order and trying to execute it at the best possible price. There has been a large amount of R&D dedicated to this, both in industry and among academics. There have been many papers written over the past 10 years. So this is very much a large and important area. So now, if we think of the problem of executing a large trade over some time horizon, there's actually a lot of details that might make the problem quite difficult. So the common kind of modeling perspective is to sort of consider this problem hierarchically and to sort of consider it at three levels. So at the highest level, we're going to think about trade scheduling, and that's about taking this this parent order, which might be an order for which is the entire size that you want to execute, might be an order for the entire day or a few hours or something like that, and scheduling it into smaller chunks that should be traded over smaller intervals. So say splitting this order into slices, which each should execute over 5 minutes. So the relevant kind of time scale for this sort of decision is hours for the entire parent order, minutes for each individual slice. And when people sort of think about determining optimal trade schedules, the main kind of the main determining factor is what the user wants, like a strategy or an objective. So you might think about objectives like VWAP, volume weighted average price. You look at the average price over a time interval and you want to match that as close as possible. You might consider participation trading, meaning that you want to be a certain amount of the trading at any point in time. Implementation shortfall, you're trying to optimize the price you receive relative to the price when you you initiated the order. These are a number of different objectives, and they each result in different kinds of strategies. And the kind of factors that are balanced are how urgent is the trade. Of course, we have kind of a fixed time horizon, but if you have a lot of alpha, if the trade has a lot of predictive power, maybe you want to trade that earlier rather than later. How much do you want to trade off risk versus return? So typically, if you give yourself a longer period of time, your return will be higher because you're going to pay less in terms of market impact and transaction costs. On the other hand, the price could move over that interval. The risk is higher. So these are kind of the main determining factors. Typically, you might solve for a schedule at the beginning of the day and then update it as new information arises. Or indeed, you might be in a kind of dynamic programming framework where really the quote-unquote schedule you have is really a policy. And you're sort of evaluating the state of the market over the course of the day, and your policy tells you what decisions to make as a function of that. So this is where most attention has been paid in terms of probabilistic and optimization-oriented models. But if you're looking at this kind of time horizon, typically the models you have are quite stylized, right? So you might model, let's say, the price as a an arithmetic random walk. But you're not sort of modeling things at the level which they actually occur in the markets. That's the next level down. So given a kind of schedule which tells me how I'm going to divide my trading over the course of the day, I'm going to have some quantity that I want to trade in the next 5 minutes, and I'm going to call that optimal execution of a slice. Right? So now I know I started out with 100,000 shares over the course of the day. I want to do 3,000 shares in the next 15 minutes or whatever. So what's my relevant time scale? Well, the total size for this slice is total time is on the order of minutes. The individual orders I might generate from it might be generated on the time scale of seconds. And here the considerations are a bit different. Again, we're not sort of thinking about those high level considerations. This we're sort of viewing as a subroutine in the hierarchy. And what the typical kinds of goals are here, okay, so you have to decide, am I going to use market orders or am I going to use limit orders? given the state of the limit order book, how am I going to adjust my trading? Are there sort of short-term forecasts of what's going to happen to the price, so on and so forth? And then at this level, once you've even decided this, once you've decided that, okay, I have 3,000 shares to execute in the next 5 minutes, right now I want to buy 100 shares, there's one more level deep, which is a so-called order routing problem, right, or smart order routing. And the issue here is where do you send each order, right? So you know the quantity you want to trade, you know the price you want to trade it at, but there's many markets you could trade on, and one sort of another feature of the modern marketplace is it's quite decentralized in the sense of having many different electronic exchanges, right? So you have to decide which to send it to. You're typically going to make this decision on a time scale of milliseconds. And there's the trade-offs here are quite different than above. So each of these market structures has a different fee structure or rebate structure, depending on whether you're doing market or limit orders. You might try to estimate liquidity in different kind of market centers versus the prices that are posted. Issues like latency come up because you're operating at a very, very fast time scale, so on and so forth. So the vast majority of the work in academia has been done over here. Here I think there's been some interesting work, and certainly this is a very interesting direction for the future. What I'm going to talk about in this talk is this problem. So I'm going to think about executing a slice over a time scale of minutes. I'm going to particularly be focused on the structure of a limit order book. And the main question in my mind is going to be, how do I put in orders into this limit order book and at what prices in order to get the best execution? So maybe to make sense of that, I should tell you what a limit order book is. This is a limit order book. The idea here is, I assume most people know what a limit order is, but it's an order with a price attached. So you're willing to buy 100 shares, and you're willing to pay up to a price of $99.97. So what the limit order book looks like is there is a price axis, which indicates this the limit price for each order. And this axis is discrete. Usually the unit is a cent. And for each price measured out in cents, there is a queue. And there are a number of orders that have sort of piled up. All of these orders, say, are orders to buy at the price reflected in this queue, and I'm into the height here is indicative of the quantity, right? So similarly, orders there are also orders at any given instant to sell. I'm indicating those by a negative quantity here, and they're at higher prices, right? So this is a snapshot of the market at a state in time. This is what you'd see if you look at so-called level two data. You'd see the best bids, the buy side, and the best offers, and quantities at each. So how does that picture evolve dynamically? Well, a number of things happen. The first thing is that new orders arrive. So we can imagine a process for the arrival of new limit orders, and that's got to tell me, describe the statistics of orders arriving in each of these buckets. What happens to one of these limit orders that arrive? Well, one of two things can happen. The first thing is that they can get executed. So these are, you know, maybe patient buyers who, you know, have a reservation price that they're interested in buying at. Might be these inpatient sellers coming who want to sell but want to sell quickly and are willing to sell at the best possible price. And so these guys will trade against the patient buyers. And we need a process to describe the arrival of market orders. And when these market orders arrive, what they'll do is they'll go through the buy side of this book. And they'll first sort the book by price because they want to sell at a higher price rather than a lower price. And then according to the rules of the exchange, you know, they'll trade with one of the guys in the highest price queue. Usually there's a time priority rule there. So maybe the guy at the bottom here is the guy who would put his queue in first. He's the guy who would trade with the next limit order. So with the next market order. So we need a process to describe when these market orders arrive. But that's not the only thing that can happen to an order. And in fact, what happens to the vast majority of orders is they get canceled. So if I count the total number of limit orders that arrive to a typical limit order book, and I subtract off the number of trades that occur, there's this balance, and the balance is, you know, number of canceled orders is roughly, you know, order of magnitude larger than the number of actual executed orders. So there's another sort of stochastic process, which is describing how orders that are already in the book leave the book. And that's what I'm going to call cancellations. And the other side of the market, the offered side of the market, is completely symmetric, right? So you need a process for arrivals there, cancellations, and market buy orders. Usually what you see in when you sort of think of a market with a bid offer spread, you're seeing just the price level of the best the highest queue in the bid side of the market and the lowest queue in the offered side of the market. So that's a limit order book. So now if I want to think of a control problem, if I want to think of executing a trade relative to some kind of constraint, and I, you know, I put some stochastic primitives on the evolution of this process, I already have a problem, which is that my control problem is quite high dimensional. Right, so in particular, sort of the smallest sort of state space you might think about for this is what's the sort of instantaneous snapshot of the book, which is a length for each of these queues. And there might be many of these queues, and the lengths can take many, many different values. So that's a very kind of high-dimensional problem, and cursive dimensionality and so forth kicks in. And you're not going to solve that problem exactly. What do people do in practice? Well, people are solving this problem on a daily basis, but this kind of problem, practitioners, for the most part, rather than sort of thinking of things in a sort of optimization or control-oriented framework, they think of things in a very kind of ad hoc framework. So you might have some sort of complicated ad hoc strategy with sort of many parameters that says things like, okay, if the offered side of the market has fewer than this many shares, then let's improve the bid by one, and let's leave that out there for, you know, 23 seconds, and if nothing happens, let's improve it by another tick, and so on and so forth. You have sort of very ad hoc strategies with sort of many parameters that people optimize via their experience or via backtesting or so on and so forth. But what I'm really after is a sort of principled way to sort of look at this problem in a real kind of control-oriented way. And the inspiration we take here is that there's another area in optimization and stochastic modeling where you have very kind of similar structures, and that's queuing theory. Right. So one way to think of this this limit order book and its evolution is as a pair of coupled multi-class priority queues. So in particular, I'm going to look at the buy side of the market, people who want to buy, and I'm going to consider a set of N queues. Each queue represents the collection of orders that are awaiting execution at a particular price, and they have their own arrival rates maybe and their own cancellation rates. And there is a quote-unquote server for this class of queues, which is the market orders. Right, so if a queue order arrives into one of these queues, either it's going to get canceled or eventually it's going to get service, and that's when a market order arrives. So one can think of these market orders as being some kind of server who drains work from these queues and drains it in a particular way, drains it in according to this sort of price priority rule, and then FIFO within each queue. Similarly, we can do a similar kind of model for the offered side of a market. And what we want to do is, in reality, these two things are coupled, right? So the arrival rates of the buy orders probably depend on the lowest non-empty sell order, right? The lowest price at which something is somebody is willing to sell, and the arrival rate of sell orders are sort of similar. And one can consider even more complicated dynamics potentially, and I'll come back to this. So the question is, can we sort of get insights from the sort of queuing literature and what people do for queuing networks into limit order books? And if I have a stochastic system that's evolving as a class of a pair of coupled multi-class priority queues, that's also a difficult problem. But people have been able to make some progress. So what I'm going to try and do in this talk is to answer some of the following questions. So in particular, does this sort of queuing theory representation give us any kind of advantages in terms of stochastic analysis of a limit order book? Can we get a steady state characterization? What would be really nice is to get a characterization of the dynamics of the price process, right? So for example, we observe prices with certain volatility, we observe trades with certain kind of volumes and so on and so forth. Can we get those from directly from primitives of a limit order book, which is sort of the underlying mechanism of execution? There's a class of so-called fluid and diffusion approximations that people apply in queuing. Can that sort of bias anything in terms of giving us intuition for how these things behave? Can we consider optimal execution in this framework? Right. In particular, how should one sort of place orders? If I now have a series of orders I want to execute over, the next 5 minutes that I'm looking to buy, how should I sprinkle out these orders across prices and across time? How should I sort of determine how fast I can trade without sort of significantly affecting prices? Another sort of interesting primitive is how to estimate queuing delay. So if I see the limit order book at an instant in time, and I'm thinking of putting an order in a particular place, how long is it going to be before it's going to get executed? Right. So that's another kind of interesting question. And one thing that I didn't mention is that the other side of this algorithmic trading is also electronic and in some ways algorithmic. And these market makers are one of the so-called high-frequency traders. Right, so really in the world today, for many sort of very liquid stocks, on the one hand, the sort of end users who are buying or selling or executing via algorithmic trading, and the people who are sort of instantaneously supplying them the liquidity, who are posting bids and offers, those people used to be humans too. Now they're algorithms, and they're what people call high-frequency traders. And the problems that those people face are kind of similar. And sort of maybe a third class of questions is one thing that's very important in trade execution is modeling and measuring market impact, i.e. how does my trading influence prices, or how is the price that I get affected by the quantity that I trade. And there are sort of many ways to that people have proposed to do this, and what we'd like to get is something that comes from microstructure. Right, so something that comes from rates of these different kinds of events, which are quantities that we observe and that we can sort of estimate and that there's a lot of data for. So this would be kind of a very sort of big picture goal of applying ideas from queuing theory to limit order books. But for this talk, I'm not so ambitious. And what I'm going to focus on is these items. We're going to look at fluid approximations of the underlying queuing network. And that's going to be the model that we use to look at the dynamics. And the key idea in the fluid approximation is by throwing out all the stochasticity, you get a tractable problem. So I'll come back to that in a second. But once we have this fluid approximation, I will be able to answer the question of how should you place orders in a limit order book over this kind of sliced time scale. How fast should you trade? How can you estimate delays from queuing in the limit order book? And we'll be able to give a very concise microstructure-based model of market impact. That said, I think there's a number of interesting problems in I'm certainly not going to get close to addressing. And I think there's a lot of technology that's known in sort of the queuing theory world. An intuition that's been built up that is not known in the sort of the universe of people who think about algorithmic trading. Okay, so let me just briefly go over some related literature And of course, I can't hope to give a any kind of complete survey. So this is more a list of keywords to potentially look up in terms of order execution. So I mean, there's a classic microeconomic literature on market microstructure. Not dealing per se with limit order books, but more with things like dealer markets or more kind of abstract markets. There's been a number of authors who've done significant empirical analysis of limit order books. There's been a lot of work on transaction modeling and estimation. So how can I model this this market impact object? How do I estimate that from things like trade data? What are the right functional forms? That's been considered by a number of these authors, including Jim. The optimal execution problem at the trade scheduling level. How do I schedule my trades over the course of the day? This is a significant literature. I'm going to only highlight the sort of the maybe the first two papers, and papers due to Bertina Salo and Almgren and Chris. And there's many people who've looked at various kinds of generalizations and extensions and so forth. And one class of those models, which is maybe closest to what I'm interested in, is things which explicitly model a limit order book. Right, so there's work by Obizaya and Wang and extended by others where we consider they consider execution over a long time horizon where the market impact comes from a sort of stylistic model of a limit order book, i.e. there's a sort of a, you know, if you're buying over time, there's this best bid price at any point in time. If you trade, you sort of push it back and sort of like eating into the limit order book, and then if you don't trade, it sort of recovers. So this notion of this kind of temporary or transient price impact is sort of inspired by limit order books, but it's a very, very stylized model. It's not relating back to the actual underlying events that one observes in a limit order book, but that's something that's in the same spirit. At a more detailed level, there's work by Rama Kant and his co-authors that consider stochastic models very much of the flavor that I'm talking about. Sort of is a, does not consider a fluid model, but considers sort of a pure stochastic system. And he's able to compute sort of simple probabilities, like what's the probability that the next trade will be higher than where it is now, and so on and so forth. But you know, to translate that into a sort of optimal execution for a certain quantity of trade, that proves difficult. And there's other work. And so, you know, one thing I'm not getting into is a very large literature on stochastic models of multi-class queuing. Okay, so with that, let me go ahead and give our model. We are going to look at a one-sided fluid model of the limit order book. Right? What does one-sided mean? Well, for the moment, I'm going to assume that you're interested in buying. You're interested in buying shares using only limit orders, and thus I'm only going to consider half of the book. Right. Ideally, the book should be two coupled systems. I'm only going to consider one half. We'll come back to discuss the other half. I'm going to consider a fluid model. What is a fluid model? A fluid model is we have an underlying kind of stochastic model. We believe orders are arriving and being canceled and so on and so forth at various rates. What we do with the fluid model is number one, instead of having discrete events. Instead of either an order arrives or it doesn't, we're going to have a continuum of events, right? Orders are going to be like fluid, right? They're going to flow into the system. And so we go from a discrete model to a continuous model. And instead of having sort of stochastic arrivals and cancellations, we're going to have deterministic arrivals and cancellations. We're going to replace everything with its mean, right? So if orders were, let's say limit orders were arriving according to a Poisson process that has some rate, we're going to replace that with a quantity of fluid that's evolving with according to an ordinary differential equation where the growth rate is given by that that rate. And sort of the inspiration of fluid models is this is what you would get if you sort of wrote the model on a piece of paper and stood far away and squinted. And what I mean by that is these are sort of law of large numbers kind of approximations. So you're imagining that you're thinking about a very high rate of trading, right? These arrivals are happening very, very quickly. You're scaling that. You're scaling down the size of each individual trade. And in the limit, you're going to get some kind of functional law of large numbers. And your stochastic system is going to evolve according to an ordinary differential equation. Why do people do this? Well, it's we can solve the control problems. So let's see how this works. So here's my one side of the limit order book. So I'm going to assume that there are n distinct price levels. And they're going to be, and these quantities are the quantities queued of people who want to buy at each of these price levels. And we assume that P1 is the highest price level and PN is the lowest price level. We assume that there are arrival rates of limit orders. So at each queue, say the first queue, there's an arrival rate of lambda 1, which is a rate at which sort of a fluid is accumulating in this queue. And we have a different arrival rate for each possible price. At any point in time, there's going to be a best bid price, and that's going to be the highest price queue or lowest indexed queue, which has a non-zero amount. And we assume that the market orders come in at a certain rate, and that rate is a function of this price, right? So in particular, we're imagining that if the price is lower, this market order rate is going to decrease, versus if the price is higher, presumably more people will be induced to trade, and the rate of market orders will increase. And so in terms of our cancellation, we're going to assume a uniform cancellation rate of gamma, right? So probably the easiest way is if I just illustrate how this model operates. We have these three sets of parameters. How do the queue lengths evolve? Well, let me just summarize here. I think I basically said all these points. Imagine at some point in time we start and the queue lengths are as such. All the queues have some positive quantity. Let's imagine how it evolves a little bit after the initial time. What's going to happen is in this first queue there are sort of three things affecting it. If I look at the ordinary differential equation governing its length, number one is I have arrivals of new limit orders, right? Number two, I have a market order process, and that's draining orders out of this queue, and that's the mu one is indexed by is sort of indicating that this is Q one, and that's the rate at which market orders would arrive if this was the highest price queue. And the second thing that's draining things from the queue is cancellations. The cancellations are happening at rate gamma, and that's proportional to the number of things in the queue. So that's sort of what's going on in this first queue. And all the rest of the queues, well, they're not going to see market orders, right? Because all the market orders are going to trade with the highest price queue. And so therefore, their evolution is governed simply by arrivals of new limit orders and cancellations of existing limit orders. So this process will continue. And let's assume for a second that mu 1 is bigger than lambda 1. Right, so these orders are being drained faster than they're arriving. At some point in time, this queue length will be zero, right? And it's sort of easy to look at this linear ODE and solve it. That amount of time is exactly that. And after this time T1, the queue length will be zero, and something else will happen. What will happen there? Well, the following. So after time T1, this queue is now empty. So market orders, number one, their rate changes, right? The rate is going to decrease a little bit because the price that these sellers are receiving is lower. When a market order arrives, first it has to service any new orders that showed up here, right? So this sort of new rate of market orders, we subtract off the guys who are still arriving at this price but simply not accumulating because there aren't many of them. And so this is sort of the net service rate that's seen by the second queue. It has arrivals. It has cancellations. You can similarly compute, again, assuming that this sort of net market order rate is larger than the arrival rate, there'll be some point in time where that queue is also drained to zero, and then the process repeats with the third queue. So at any given instance of time, the system is governed by a linear ordinary differential equation, but exactly what ordinary differential equations you have to look at the identity of what queues are empty or not. Okay. In particular, what is the steady state of this model? Well, I'm making the assumption that all these arrival rates are strictly greater than zero. Otherwise, we could just throw out a queue if it's never going to have any arrivals. And I'm also making the assumption that this market order rate is decreasing as the price gets lower. And so, therefore, if I define lambda I to be the cumulative arrival rates of all queues with priority I or higher, so let's say I0 would be starting from here or larger, there's going to be some queue at which this sort of cumulative arrival rate exceeds the cumulative rate of market orders that would arrive if this was the best bid. So at this point, this queue will not be drained, right? This queue will also be governed by an ordinary differential equation, but there will be a level at which the net rate of arrivals which is the difference between this and this, is going to balance with the rate of cancellations, and that's precisely this level. Right, so this sort of Q on the edge will equilibrate to this level, which is sort of, again, balancing net arrivals with cancellations. Qs which are higher price, equivalently lower priority, will have zero length. And then the higher level queues will equilibrate purely from arrivals and cancellations. Okay, so we have this this fluid dynamics. Let's formulate our execution problem. And again, recall that we're thinking of something like a 5-minute time frame. You have a slice of trades to execute in this time frame. And so the way we're going to formulate that is you're going to purchase some number of total shares in this interval of time. And your goal is to achieve the lowest possible price, right? You're a cheap fellow, and you prefer paying less to more, and that's your problem. And at some level, we're trading off these two things that we want to minimize, which is the price that we pay and the time that it takes to execute. To see how those two are related, notice that if I start posting my orders at higher prices, well, number one, the rate of market orders is going to increase, so I'm going to be able to execute faster. Number two, there are going to be fewer other people in front of me, right? So if I post an order here, all those people are in front of me and they get serviced before me. If I post an order here, I'm the first in line. So there are two effects that create this trade-off between executing at a low price and executing quickly. And so equivalently, we can formulate this problem. We can fix the number of shares we want to execute. We can fix a price target, i.e. we don't want to pay more than this average price. We constrain our quantity, and we try to minimize the total time. And this may or may not be feasible, depending on the price you put in. It might not be possible to trade at that average price, given any sort of time horizon. But for values that it is feasible, our goal is to trace an efficient frontier, that is, pairs of quantity, execution time, and price which are achievable, right, and which are optimal in the sense of a Pareto sense between average price and total time. And we can trace that curve either by solving a minimum price problem or a minimum time problem. It's going to be more convenient to look at this minimum time problem, so that's what I'm going to do. Okay. So let me formulate this this minimum time problem. Again, I have an average cost target, which I want to satisfy, a total quantity constraint, which I want to satisfy, and I want to minimize the amount of time it takes. I have to describe to you my my decision variables, my controls, and in the most sort of general setting, we might consider a process which describes the cumulative number of orders placed up to any point in time. Right. So if I have this this process, which is going to be deterministic, because my whole model is deterministic. This deterministic process would allow me, if it's sort of smoothly varying, to continuously place orders in the book. If it's if it has jumps, that would correspond to piling a whole load of orders in the books at once. So this is sort of the most general framework that you might think about. And if you sort of look at this a little bit, what becomes immediately clear is actually, even given all this generality, what you would do is you'd place all your orders at time zero. Why is that? Well, if there's some total quantity of orders that you want to execute at various prices, you can take all those same orders, place them at time zero. The number of the price you get will not change, and the amount of time it'll take to execute will be at most what it was originally, because you're going to be in front of the queues. Right, in the whenever you would have placed them originally versus placing them at time zero, there would have been people that arrived in between who would have gotten time priority. So a time priority argument sort of makes it clear that among this class of very sort of general class of controls, the optimal controls will place all their orders at time zero. So that's going to be good from an optimization perspective, in the sense of it's going to make our problem a lot simpler. From a practical perspective, that's less clear whether that's a reasonable thing to do. I'll come back and talk about that. Okay, so let's think about our optimal limit order problem in this framework. I know now that my decision variable is simply the number of initial orders that I'm going to place at each price level. And sort of given that sort of fixed initial order, there's going to be some quantity of my orders that remain unexecuted at each time, and I'm going to denote that by Zi of t, t indexing time, and I indexing the which price level I'm at. And there's going to be also orders from other investors evolving. So maybe the initial state of the book looks something like this. There were some orders here initially. You know, I put in my orders, they sort of went on top, and you know, market orders are coming in a great new one. So that's sort of the initial state of the book. I'm going to define some times here. First time I'm going to define is tau L of Z, and that's going to be the smallest amount of time before my orders up to a price level I are executed, and all the orders from other investors are also executed. So in particular, let's say I'm looking at L equals 2. That would be the amount of time it would take for these green things and these blue things to totally drain. And I'm implicitly assuming that the arrival rate of market orders would be such that the equilibrium is out here, so that they would drain at some point. Right? So this is some time. Why is that relevant to me? Well, the time that I'm interested in is the time for all my orders to execute. And that's going to be the time for my orders to be have been executed. So if L is the highest index, i.e. the lowest price I use, I'm going to want all of my orders to have been executed by that time. And for my orders to trade, the orders of others at lower prices also have to have traded. Right? So my objective of minimizing my time to execution is precisely this function. And so this is my optimization problem. I'm minimizing time to execution as a function of the initial order quantities. I'm constraining the total quantity I execute, the total price, and want positive orders. And what I can do first is I can focus on fixing a QL. And the nice observation is that this function tau L, which again only looks up to QL and higher price, is a concave function. So that's just from analysis of the ordinary differential equation. And what does that tell us? Well, if we're minimizing a concave function over a convex set, the optimum has to occur at an extreme point. And usually that's a problem, because usually there's sort of many extreme points and there's many sort of NP-hard problems, which are minimization of concave functions. But in our case, the extreme points are sort of trivial. Because we have only these two constraints, the extreme points are of the constraint polytope place orders in at most two Qs. Right? So this sort of baby version of the problem where I cut off at a particular Q, the optimal strategy is to place orders in an at most two Qs. And that generalizes to the full problem also, because whatever optimizes the original problem is also going to optimize my subproblem for the right level of the index. So what we get is that, to be precise, there exists an optimal solution z star to that problem, where this optimal solution, the vector has cardinality of at most two, i.e. orders are placed in at most two Qs. And further, you can do some more analysis to show that orders are indeed only ever placed in adjacent queues, right? So if you were placing orders in two queues and they were some distance apart, you could do better by somehow moving them close together. Okay, so this provides almost a full characterization of the problem. In particular, now here I'm moving back to a minimize average cost kind of formulation. And recall from before, I'm defining I0 to be the first Q at which the arrivals of limit orders outweigh market orders. This is going to be the first Q that's non-empty in equilibrium. And C bar is going to be the level of market orders that Q would receive minus the level of limit orders at Qs of strictly higher priority. And what's easy to see is if the quantity I want to execute is less than that C bar of I, and assuming I start with an empty book, I'm going to put all my orders in that bucket, and that's the price I'm going to get. I can't do anything better than that, because if I put my orders at a higher price, the market orders will never get there. Limit orders will queue up in front of me, right? And if I put my orders at a lower price, I'm giving up money, right? So it's clear that for very sort of small sizes, I'm going to join the best bid in equilibrium. And you can sort of extend that analysis. Now if I want to trade a little bit more, I'm going to, you know, I can't trade my full quantity at this level. I have to also use a higher price. And the result from before suggests that I'm going to sort of balance between them. And so, you know, from one price level to the next, trades will place orders at those two related price levels, where here these capacities are the maximum quantity you could execute if you put an order in only at that price. And so finally, there's going to be some arrival rate to the first queue. And this quantity represents the total quantity that could be executed via limit orders period if you put all your orders at the highest price. So therefore, if your quantity is greater than that, it's infeasible and you need a different model. You've got to think about using market orders. Okay. And it's easy to compute these also from not from initial state. What does that mean for the efficient frontier? The efficient frontier, we're going to look at price as a function of quantity that you want to trade. And at these different prices, which correspond to the various kinds of queues, if I want to trade exactly the quantity I could trade at that queue, that will be the optimal order. And in between, I will trade quantities that are sort of in between. And I'll show you this graphically in a second. But what this sort of suggests is my efficient frontier, price as a function of quantity, is going to be moving on the x-axis between these different levels of quantity, and on the y-axis between these levels of price, the different ticks in the limit order book. And in between these x-y pairs, there's going to be some kind of interpolation. And sort of roughly speaking, we expect that number one. So, precisely speaking, this function is only going to be a function of the ratio, i.e., how many shares you're trading per time, and you can sort of see that because we can normalize by time over there. And if I look at what's on the right-hand side, it's roughly speaking, it's going to be linear if these arrival rates are constant, and it's going to be sublinear if they are decreasing. Okay. So let's, it's probably best to look at this with an example. So this is a stock called First Solar. And to illustrate to you the true cutting edge nature of this research, this is based on data collected yesterday. So why did I pick this stock? Well, how you execute really depends on the name. If you're executing a name like Citibank, that's a $4 stock with a 1 cent bid offer and 100,000 shares on the bid, 100,000 shares on the offer at all times. There's no sort of interesting optimal execution problem. But this is a sort of reasonably liquid name, 2 million shares per day, and it has a non-trivial bid offer. And to give you a magnitude of what the transaction costs here are, the closing price yesterday was about $110. And therefore, a tick is about a basis point. So I have to tell you what the different primitives are in my stochastic model. And these we can directly estimate from the level 2 event data. And so in particular, I have an arrival rate of limit orders. And I'm measuring limit orders relative to my reference price, which is the current best offered price. And these are the arrival rates you see. So in particular, if it's a bid offer is a cent, we see an arrival rate of about 4,000 shares per minute. And going out one more cent into the next queue, the rate of limit orders arriving is about 2,000, and it sort of decreases. I'm sorry, this is market orders. So these are the market orders as a function of the trading rate. And by the way, you can see that this is a very sort of pronounced curve, that the rate of market orders clearly depends on the bid offer spread. And indeed, moving the bid price up does seem to, at least in the data, induce trading. Limit orders, again, we have a limit order rate for as a function of distance to the best offer. Cancellation rate is about 6, and the way to interpret that is the life of an order is about 1 over 6 of a minute, or about 10 seconds in this data. So what does it look like? This is the equilibrium limit order book. If you look at the rate of at which cumulative limit orders are eaten by market orders, equilibrium. These queues are not going to get any market orders. This queue is at balance. Some of it is executing, and some of it is getting canceled. And these queues are all empty because they're all being drained faster than they accumulate. And that results in this efficient frontier. So in particular, what am I doing here? I'm looking at, as a function of my trading rate, how fast do I want to trade this name? What is going to be my average cost relative to just paying the full bid offer spread? If you're trading very small kind of quantities, you can join this best bid price and you'll get executed and you'll make a bid offer. As you start to trade higher quantities, you start to have to use the next queue, and then sort of there's an interpolation here, interpolation there, and so on. So these are sort of the knot points that I indicated before, and in between it sort of has this kind of interpolation. But overall you can see it has a concave or a decreasing shape in terms of transaction cost. But again, this is sort of a transaction cost functional that's measured directly from limit order data, not from from having to actually execute trades or anything. One thing I'll point out very quickly is that are these numbers reasonable? Well, the way people usually think about this is participation in sort of overall trading rate. And if you think about the volume I showed on the slide before, the total rate of trades of this across all different venues is about 6,000 shares per day. So here, if you're trading 6,000 shares per minute, so if you're trading 4,000 shares per minute, you're about 60% participation. Are you going to be trading at sort of one tick to the offer? No. Here, you're probably really going to be moving the price, and this is probably not a good kind of estimate. However, here, if you're in sort of the sort of 30% kind of participation range, sort of idea of paying sort of one to five ticks is kind of reasonable from what I understand. The numbers look reasonable for small rates of participation. For high rates of participation, this is definitely understating a transaction cost, but that's a function of our model. Because you imagine if you're really trading, 60% of the total quantity that it trades, you're sort of getting in front of a lot of other people who were placing limit orders in your absence. They're probably going to shift the price higher, and that's going to impact the price in a way that this model is not accounting. So there's a price impact that's not explicitly modeled, and that explains that. How much time do I have? 2 minutes. Okay. So I'll touch briefly on a number of issues. One is how would you actually implement this? This is a policy for a fluid model. Our real system is stochastic. We observe certain kinds of queue lengths. And we have to make discrete trading decisions. Well, there's a number of ways that people typically translate fluid policies to deterministic policies, and sort of the main way is maybe discrete review, i.e. you look at the state of the book now, you interpret that as a fluid state, you put in whatever the fluid action is, and you come back 30 seconds from now, you revisit it, and you do whatever the kind of new action is. So you sort of, in the original fluid system, you would have only done one trade, and you would have sort of gone away. Here you're going to revisit and adjust your trade because the system isn't deterministically evolving anymore. You have to account for a bit for stochasticity. You can also do approximate dynamic programming. One feature of this model was that all orders are placed at time zero. I said that might present potential problems. Here are the two problems it might present. One is information leakage. If I put in a whole bunch of orders at the very beginning, that sort of is giving away my hand a little bit, and other people might exploit that. Sort of issue is that typically from the perspective of the high-level order scheduling process, you want sort of the average price over that time interval. If you put in all your orders at the beginning, what's going to happen is if you're looking to buy, you put in a bunch of orders. Whenever the market is going down, you're going to get executed for sure. Whenever the market is going up, nothing is going to get executed at all. So by putting in orders at the beginning, you're exposing yourself to a kind of adverse selection. You're not getting the average price, which you typically in these kind of models you expect to be zero if there's no drift. So one way to solve that is not to put in all your orders at the beginning, but to sort of dribble the orders out. And one can consider variations of this this kind of model where you divide your slice into a number of child orders where an explicit constraint is the size of the child order. And then you sort of trade this subproblem optimally, and there's precise formulations of that possible. What are a number of shortcomings? The model isn't, in the real world, isn't stationary, right? Rates change over time, and that's something you have to re-estimate. I mentioned order placement influences arrival rates, and that's why some of our numbers in the sort of extreme range didn't seem reasonable. Ideally, we'd like a two-sided model of the limit order book. In particular, we'd like to explicitly allow for the possibility of also using market orders. Whatever I said here is not relevant for illiquid names. I'm assuming kind of a law of large numbers regime, and if you're trading every 10 minutes, it's not relevant. And finally, and this is something that I think is very interesting, the real world actually isn't how I describe it. There's not this one limit order book. There's maybe five limit order books that matter in practice. So not only do you have to decide what orders you want to put in and at what price, but where are you going to send them, and that's really somehow should be a joint decision. So I think I'm over time, so I'll end on that note. That's right.